It's a Packer touchdown.
Second and five. Garoppolo fires over the middle. Caught. Samuel. The rookie is inside the 10 to the end zone. Touchdown, 49ers.
Third down and five. Rodgers, same side. And this time, it's in the hands of Lazard. Incredible play. 35-yard touchdown.
That's right.
On first down, Wilson keeps. Surveys, nowhere to go, and back in the end zone. Touchdown! What a catch by Tyler Lockett.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
Hey, hey, that's how we've won all year, team, right? Hey, you held them to 20 points, man. You gave us a chance at the end, but I got three words for you. You like that?
You like that? You like that?
Yeah! What's up, Las Vegas? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into the Mac Attack here on 920 The Game. I am Ryan McKinnell. Got the trusty sidekick, as always, on the ones and twos, Chris Magnum Chapman. And that was Captain Kirk himself, Kirk Cousins, celebrating what was a outstanding win against New Orleans Saints. And hey, you know what? Now for twice in his career, Kirk Cousins has got to say, you like that?
Yeah, only two times.
Well, you know, I think that's the total number of big games Kirk Cousins has won.
Well, you think for Kirk that translates to away from football? Like maybe he has a great great evening with the wife. You like that? Yeah! Or he saves some money while he's buying a suit. You like that? Yeah!
Gets like 10 extra fries in the bottom of the McDonald's bag.
You like that? Yeah! Actually, I'm loving it, but...
See what you did there. See what you did there, Magnum. Oh, boy. Man, we spent so much time talking about Kirk Cousins yesterday. We barely got to any of the coaching changes. Mike McCarthy finding a new home in Dallas. I did stump for one Jerry Jones. Pew, pew, yeah! Bing, 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 bing. We did do that. We did stump for old Yosemite Sam, the billionaire Texan who was too loyal to an employee.
Is he Yosemite Sam or is he the guy from The Simpsons?
I don't know. I'm mixed. Oh, that's a good question.
The rich Texan, because I think the rich Texan actually also owned the Springfield Isotopes, who were supposed to move to Albuquerque before Homer discovered their plan. And I think he was the owner of that team.
He's definitely probably more closer to the Simpsons Texan. Well, whatever the case might be, he's definitely a cartoon character.
That guy's got his hands in everything. I mean, he owned the logging company. He owns an oil company. That's probably Jerry Jones.
How did Jerry Jones make his money?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I feel like I'm throttling him every day for being this rich oil tycoon, which we know he isn't. I mean, actually, we don't know. I'm sitting here making fun of Jerry Jones.
I want to say he was probably in, like, investments, maybe.
Hey, Siri, how did Jerry Jones make all of his money? Well, he was born in Los Angeles. I'm going to go through his whole Wikipedia page. I'm saying, well, he was born in L.A., and, yeah. Life insurance? Life insurance.
Oh, man. So wait, someone passed away or he was involved in that?
He started a life insurance company.
I know he played football at Arkansas. He was roommates with Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah. And he was in Kappa Sigma fraternity. Wow. What are we finding out about Jerry Jones? I know this is a very interesting lead-in here on the Mac Attack Vegas. I'm sure you appreciate this due diligence that we've done on the history of Jerry Jones. But listen, we got some coaching news to get to. Now, we had the aforementioned Cowboys. We'll get to that, but we have some bigger news. Well, I don't want to say bigger, but certainly in terms of contracts. I know Mike McCarthy is not getting what Matt Rhule's getting. This man, Matt Rhule, the former coach of the Baylor Bears, is getting John Gruden money, Magnum, to go to the Carolina Panthers, a team that just fired their two-time coach of the year. Again, I mentioned this yesterday. In the last 20 years, the man with the most coach of the year awards is Bill Belichick at 3. Next closest is Ron Rivera at 2. Just going to let that sink in for a second, because you just fired that guy who's gotten you 2 coach of the years in the last decade, and you hired a college coach. Now, I'll do credit to Rhule and what he did at Baylor. He turned the program around, made him respectable again, and he did a good job. But the contract that he is getting right now is 7 years for $60 million with the potential to see that increase to $70 million over 7 years. A reminder, John Gruden is making $100 million for 10 years.
Well, there's a couple things, too, because I know Rhule was the hot name.
He was.
A lot of teams looked at him last year. I know the Jets looked at him, and I guess they didn't want one of his assistant coaches that he wanted to bring or something. Or maybe they wanted him to have a specific coach, and he didn't want it. But
yeah.
The problem I have is Art Briles proved that you could win at Baylor. Right? Now, granted, Art Briles was kind of scuzzy. Well, not kind of. He was scuzzy.
You said kind of. My eyebrows almost jumped off my forehead.
He was totally scuzzy. What were right. there, 55 cases of sexual assault or something like that on the
horrible.
Baylor?
Yeah, it was horrible.
But he proved that you could get players to Baylor to have success, right? He won lots of games at Baylor. So it's not like Matt Rhule walked into, I don't know, UNLV.
No, but he walked into a bit of scandal.
He did. Yeah. He did. And there was certainly a black eye.
Mm-hmm.
But A, you're in Texas. B, Texas, University of Texas is way down. Texas A&M is down. So it's not like he was competing with
typical Texas times.
The typical, yes. Yeah. So I don't know how good. I mean, obviously he's a good coach, right? Obviously he's a very good coach
in college.
Yes. Does that translate to a guy who should be making close to $10 million a year to coach an NFL team? Probably not.
Now, if I'm the Carolina Panthers fan base, I mean, I don't really care because it's not my money and it doesn't count against the salary cap. It's not really, but. I mean, it is indicative of where your franchise is in terms of their focus and their decision-making. And again, a coach that was a two-time coach of the year is now gone, and you've hired a college coach, and you're paying him stupid money. Like, stupid money. It was stupid for John Gruden to get it, and it's stupid for Matt Rhule to get it.
Yeah, I mean,
just by definition, that's just a lot of money for a coach.
It doesn't make any sense to me that you would be willing to give a guy who's unproven— Right, like we heard. Remember when Jamarcus Russell came out, and then there was that he got so much money to basically be the equivalent of me in the NFL.
Yeah,
and they decided at that time they were going to structure the slot. You know, oh, if you're drafted here, this is how much you're going to make.
Right, Jamarcus Russell pulled off the largest heist, the biggest heist, such a big heist in the NFL that they had to change the rules afterwards.
Yeah, so. You have an issue with giving unproven players all this money, right? Like to me, if I'm a player, I should be able to hold out for what you feel like you're like for what I feel I'm worth.
Well, absolutely, and that's why you see it happen so
often.
Now
they have no problem giving an unproven coach stupid money. So I'm not sure I see why one is okay but the other isn't. Like if I'm a high draft pick, I shouldn't be slotted into what you feel I'm worth. I should be able to sign for what I feel I'm worth.
Yeah, and the thing with coaches is their money is fully guaranteed and the player's money is not. Now, Matt Rhule, I will be, I don't know, we'll see. You talk about Jamarcus Russell. With that contract that Jamarcus Russell got, it was a ton of pressure, right? The optics of that mega deal that he got. Matt Rhule's going to have to deal with that as well. Because not only are
Is he, though?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Yes, it comes with tons. Number one, it comes with tons of expectations. $10 million a year in 7 years, $70 million. That is a ton of expectation. Flip that around. I think Ron Rivera, despite probably not, we don't live in Carolina, but I think he had probably, it felt like he was wearing out his welcome. Those fans are going to regret that 5 years from now.
Yes, yes. However.
So I'm saying the optics of that also, the fact that you're replacing a two-time coach of the year and you have to do better than a two-time coach of the year. And you're getting the contract that also draws out. I'm just saying, there's a lot of pressure on Matt Rhule.
Maybe in Charlotte there is.
Yeah.
I don't feel like across the league there is, because the reality is the Carolina Panthers, while a pretty good franchise in the last decade or so, and a lot of that had to do with Cam Newton and Ron Rivera, they're not a marquee franchise.
In terms of popularity, they're not. But now, remember, they did well in the 90s, they did well in the 2000s, and they did well in the 2010s.
Yeah, I mean, they went to a Super Bowl with Jake DeLome. Yeah,
exactly.
You're like, who?
Exactly, Musa Muhammad. Right. So my point is, and you said it, outside of Carolina, it's probably not, outside of Charlotte, it's probably not that big a deal.
Yeah,
but,
that's
all that Matt Rhule needs to worry about is Charlotte.
But if Matt Rhule goes to the Giants and he gets that contract, first of all, the Giants would never give it to him.
No, they wouldn't.
Secondly, the Cowboys would never give to him. But if he goes to one of those two teams, that comes with pressure, a lot of pressure.
National pressure, yes. The gaze is definitely more wide if you're going to a major market like New York. Speaking of New York gets their new head coach today, Joe Judge.
Yeah, who?
Yeah.
Do they think it was Aaron Judge?
Just be glad you're a Jets fan, man. Yeah. I mean, you know what? In hindsight, I'll take Gase.
Yeah, I will too for a lot of reasons because I think
they, and if anyone's been listening over the last 6 months.
Oh yeah, Adam Gase is my hero.
Yeah,
but as I wear my New York Jets sweatshirt today, but with Judge, it's first of all the Patriots wide receivers are probably the least contributing unit on that team. Secondly,
pretty terrible squad just in general. If you look at probably the league average.
Yeah, I mean, secondly. While Bill O'Brien and Mike Vrabel have done successful jobs where they are,
mm-hmm.
the history of Belichick assistants going someplace, I mean, this guy's never run an offense before.
Vrabel was a Super Bowl winner.
Yes.
And Bill O'Brien coached Penn State and other places.
Yeah, so there was a little bit of experience.
You want to hear Judge's coaching history? Do you know it? Have you heard it?
No, I'm sure it's awful. He coached at Stony Brook?
Basically. Started as a grad assistant at Mississippi State.
Okay.
And he moved as a linebacker coach at Birmingham Southern.
Birmingham Southern?
I don't know.
Yikes.
Special teams coach. Assistant. No, sorry. Not a coach. What am I saying? Special teams assistant at Alabama. All right.
All right. So he's worked his way up.
Then he made the jump. Special teams wide receiver coach with the Patriots. He was a special teams assistant at Alabama, then the special teams wide receivers coach at the Patriots. He's young. He now comes from Saban and Belichick, and he's now the head coach of the New York Football Giants, one of the most storied, most heralded franchises in the history of the National Football League. And this comes with a stark reminder that right now in the NFL, there's one black GM and three black head coaches. The Rooney Rule is a joke.
Yeah, it is.
It is a complete and utter joke. By having it, you shine a light on what a joke it is because we keep talking about it, and it just sounds, it just rolls right off the tongue, right? The Rooney Rule. This is bad, man. Like, I don't know what else to say. It's not about qualifications. It's not about anything other than what it is, and that is systemic racism. And you're not going to want to hear it because, No. When you have one black GM out of 32 teams and three head coaches out of 32 teams, my math is not great, but that is not even 10% of the league. When the history of the league, specifically the last 30 years, is largely composed of African-Americans and people of color playing in the league. And to suggest that they're not capable of the job is absolutely ridiculous. Mike Tomlin is one of the better coaches of the last 20 years. Tony Dungy, I know he's been retired for a little bit, but his resume speaks for itself. And I'm not saying that these, when I say systemic racism, that's not like Klan hood-wearing racism and racial slurs and this conspiracy necessarily to not have black coaches. It is preconceived notions. It is biases that people, owners, probably don't even know that they have. They'll reason and rationalize it, right? They don't have the temperament. They don't have the experience, whatever the case may be. Whatever they use. But when you look at a guy like Joe Judge, who has not even a sliver of head coaching experience. Not at high school, not at college. He was barely a coach in the pros.
Yeah, wide receivers coach.
And a special teams coach. And a short tenured one at that. And prior to that, he was an assistant special teams coach at Alabama.
And Birmingham Southern.
Right.
Whatever the hell that is.
And then you have other coaches out there, Eric Bieniemy, you have coaches out there that are available that have legitimate chops And they're consistently being passed over for white boys who, well, we got a feeling about them. Let's give them a shot.
Yeah. Well, and then the other issue with this is how many times do black coaches get second opportunities?
Very rarely.
Right? Like, yeah, Herm Edwards did. But Herm Edwards left the Jets. He was going to get fired.
Right. Marvin Lewis might.
Maybe. Right? But I mean, he was with Cincinnati for, what, 17 years?
And credit to Cincinnati. I mean, well, I don't know how you want to look at that. Cincinnati did right by Marvin Lewis. They gave him opportunity after opportunity.
Yes, and even when they were down, they gave him a chance to see it out. But, like, I mean, the reality is a lot of these guys, like Todd Bowles to me is a good coach.
I don't think there's any question Todd Bowles is a good coach.
Todd Bowles just happened to coach the Jets at a bad time. Well, there's lots of bad times in their history.
Todd Bowles should still be the coach of the New York Jets.
I would still take Todd Bowles over Adam Gase. Yeah, absolutely.
I agree.
So I feel like it goes deeper than the first time. It's the retreads, right? Like how many times do we see guys like Mike McCarthy? Look, Mike McCarthy won one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. And I'm not saying Mike McCarthy's a bad coach.
No, but he's got like a 10-minute highlight reel of doofus-level decision-making
late in games. There's the reality that if he doesn't play, if he doesn't have Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback,
right?
I mean, we're seeing how good Aaron Rodgers is right now without Mike McCarthy.
Yeah.
We've seen multiple bad white coaches get second opportunities, third opportunities sometimes.
Yeah. And listen, we've seen bad black coaches get second opportunities. Hugh Jackson, I mean, there's been other.
Well, that was a bit by default, wasn't it?
It was. But the fact remains, the numbers speak for themselves. 32 teams, 3 black coaches, 1 GM.
How do they fix this?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Conversation? A light being pointed on it and not just using a word and talking about Rooney Rule this and Rooney Rule that. Well, I mean, we're doing our due diligence. No, you have to talk about it, Magnum. You have to point to the numbers and you have to call it what it is.
And you and I are old enough to where we can remember when there was that stigma to black quarterbacks, right? Like Warren Moon had to go play in Canada.
Still there, Bill Polian suggesting that Lamar Jackson should be a wide receiver.
However,
that's exactly what we're talking about.
But a lot of those moronic thoughts are being pushed out. Like, it's kind of like a very small percentage of guys who still think nonsense like that. Like, we'll see with a quarterback from Ohio State. Oh, he's got to go play wide receiver.
Well, unfortunately, it's the people in power, albeit if it is minimal and that number is shrinking.
I do think that we've seen this trend now where general managers don't care. Right, like Baltimore did not care that Bill Polian felt like Lamar Jackson should play wide receiver.
Yeah.
The guys in Kansas City didn't care that Pat Mahomes came from an offense in college that basically did not run the ball.
Yeah, it's definitely changing in terms of the quarterback, but it's not changing in terms of the coaches.
Right. Yeah, so I think we have to kind of get to a point where hopefully those dinosaurs who think like that die off or get out of the league.
I think the problem with that is, right, ownership chooses a coach so often.
Yeah.
In conjunction with the GM, but we go back. One GM is black in the entire league, right?
But maybe we'll get to a point where the children who like Stephen Jones, maybe Jones will be like, you know what? I don't know how to run a football team. I watched my dad screw up the Cowboys for 25 years.
Yeah. Well, the issue is again, ownership makes the GM decisions. When you have one black GM,
I think
they're going to be less inclined to hire black coaches potentially. When you have essentially an all-white GM staff across the league, they're going to be less inclined. And again, I'm not saying it's like hood-wearing Klanism. It's not that sort of racism. It's the Bill Polian. It's the illogical racism or the preconceived notions or the biases that you have from bygone years, right? And it is a cultural shift. And you asked how the question is, how do you get on the other side of it? Time?
Yeah, I think it's time and conversation, you said, but... Yeah. I mean, the reality is Ozzie Newsome is one that will go down as maybe a top 5 general manager.
No question, top 5.
He played the game.
Yep.
He's a Hall of Famer on the field, a Hall of Famer in the front office.
I mean, 2 Super Bowls on 2 different squads.
He is a guy who has proven that you can play the game and be highly successful, not only as a general manager, but as a black general manager.
Yep.
It's ridiculous that it's 2020 and we are still having this conversation about black coaches in the NFL. I mean, I remember when it was I can remember when Art Shell was hired to coach the Raiders, what a big deal it was. And Art Shell was a good coach.
Yeah, you don't think that black coaches get a raw deal in the NFL? Look no further than the Chicago Bears. When just about 10 years ago, head coach Lovie Smith, who was having great success in college, out there at Illinois doing his thing with his Santa beard, taking Illinois to a bowl game. Absolutely. And doing
I like Lovie.
Oh, I love Lovie.
First of all, how do you not love a guy named Lovie?
Well, there you go. 10 years ago, Lovie Smith was fired from the Chicago Bears after going 10-6. Lovie Smith was fired from the Chicago Bears after going 10-6. 10-6, 10-6, 10-6. Matt Nagy still had a job. What came after that? Mark Trestman?
Yeah.
John Fox?
John Fox, Mark Trestman?
10-6.
Wasn't Mark Trestman? Didn't he come from the Montreal Alouettes?
Yes.
They hired a guy from the CFL.
Yeah.
That was successful.
Yeah. Worked out well. So was John Fox. How successful was that?
Yeah. Another retread.
He absolutely imploded that entire franchise, kicked Brian Urlacher out, and changed the culture for the worse. The fact that the Bears are still rebuilding from.
Then he went to Denver and kind of did the same thing.
He's a joke. The Bears are a joke. The NFL is a joke for those reasons. Lovie Smith was fired after a 10-6 season precisely because they didn't believe that he could do any better or whatever the reason was. Now, what type of illogical delusion decision-making do you have to get to come to the decision when you are the Chicago Bears and you have done nothing and this man led you to a Super Bowl 3 years prior, 4 years prior, led you to an NFC Championship, I believe, the year prior.
With and a team that probably wasn't that good.
No kidding. Understatement of the year. To a 10-6 record, and then you fire him. The biases are overwhelming. They're clear. And there's historical precedence. And we're living in the midst of it. And honestly, this Joe Judge hire is a great example of it on some level.
Well, and I think you can make the case that the Matt Rhule hiring is as well. I mean, you're willing to give a guy that much money. Who has never proven at all.
Yeah.
It's not like you gave Bill Belichick that money. It's not like you're giving, they fired Ron Rivera, who wouldn't have gotten that money, despite winning two-time coach of the year. It's not like they gave Bruce Arians that money. They literally, it's a lot like the Cardinals last year, right? They fired the black coach after one season, and then they go out and they give all this money to Cliff Kingsbury, who ran a gimmick offense in college, never really proved he was a great college coach, and yet they hired this guy. And it's like, well, I don't understand why you fired the old guy. He had zero chance to prove that he could do the job. But you're going to give all this money to a guy in college who was mediocre at best because he coached Pat Mahomes in college? That's why?
Kansas City Chiefs coach Eric Bieniemy. This is I mentioned him already, the laundry list of accomplishments. This is from Adam Kilgore, WP, out here saying, Bieniemy has been turned down by 6 teams in 2 years, which after today's 2 hires led to confusion and frustration among some minority coaches. But one more team still needs a coach, and Bieniemy would be an ideal fit for the Cleveland Browns. I agree with that. Here's another line from Robert Klemko, an NFL reporter. After the Bieniemy stub, Joe Judge hire, coaching agent I spoke with projects a small exodus of black assistants from NFL to the college ranks. Quote, they're starting to feel like there's no future for them in the NFL. Oh, I'm shocked. What would ever lead them to believe that?
And the other thing is, there's been a lot of successful black coaches in college.
We just mentioned Lovie Smith.
Well,
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
10-6 in Chicago, and now he's dead. It's criminal, but it's Charlie Strong.
Yeah, this Willie Taggart. Yes,
the list. It's disheartening. Magnum.
Kevin Sumlin.
Yep.
And there's been a lot of pretty good black. James Franklin, right? His name was thrown about. If USC fired the bozo they have, that he was a name that was potentially on their list. I mean, James Franklin is the best coach in college football.
So you know what you said? How can it change? Maybe this is what it has to. One of the things that has to happen. Yes, time and all the things we suggested.
Sucks,
but it's horrible.
Not have to take a step backwards.
It's horrible. I agree. But maybe that's Went with the money. Maybe it's not a step backwards. Maybe they go down there. I don't. This is crazy that we're even talking about it. But reestablish themselves and show
the
them.
Thing is, with a guy like Bieniemy, who beyond a shadow of a doubt, deserves a shot.
Yeah,
right.
We
have seen his name on a list for
years,
multiple seasons.
Yeah.
We don't know if he can recruit. We don't know what kind of connections he has to certain coasts, to certain shoe companies. Like we don't. Like that's part of the college game. I mean, it's Herm Edwards has proved that it can be done, but Herm Edwards was on TV, right? Herm Edwards was a guy on ESPN, so kids knew who he was. If you're a high school kid, do you really know who the offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs is, unless you live in Kansas or Missouri?
That's a good point. But you know how important that NFL link is to recruiting. But no, it's a fair point. It's a fair point. Man, it's always that time of year, right? Where this starts to happen and you get disenfranchised and you look at the numbers and you're like, Jesus, come on. It's a joke. It's as much of a joke as Major League Baseball trying to curb cheating or you don't care. You say that you care, but if you really cared, you would have got ahead of it. That wasn't even a natural segue. I wasn't even trying to get to that. But one of my favorite things before we had to break and got some news on Antonio Brown, not a guy that we talk a lot about these days, try to leave him be. But remember we were talking about the Cowboys' new coaching hire, obviously, Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy came with a little bit of collateral damage, and that collateral damage was Wade Phillips. Or, excuse me, bad segue. You understand, though, why I would think of Wade Phillips and the Cowboys, given his history there. But Wade Phillips, obviously, with the Los Angeles Rams, getting let go after a season where, well, their defense wasn't that bad, especially after Jalen Ramsey arrived. Marcus Peters got shipped out. That really wasn't Wade Phillips' fault. Wade Phillips was the sacrificial lamb in Los Angeles because you can't get rid of, obviously, the boy genius Sean McVay. But Wade Phillips had nothing to do with Jared Goff. Wade Phillips, by all accounts, did his job, and he got fired, which, I don't know, man, from a culture standpoint, I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out. And the trust factor, what that does with Sean McVay and the players there. And listen, I think Wade Phillips is genuinely pretty liked. And I'm sure he's well liked on that defense because he did some great things with that defense. So he gets fired. But here's the great thing. Wade Phillips has got Twitter. And as we know on social media, we can see everything that happens on Twitter. So someone, a guy named Stephen A., not that Stephen A., this is just a general fan, quote tweeted a tweet from reporter from the LA Times, Gary Klein. And the tweet was about, Gary Klein's tweet was about Wade Phillips getting fired. And then the Stephen A. guy chimed in and said, so the offense loses production, but Wade Phillips gets fired? Make that make sense. And the defense was actually better this year versus the last, which it was when you look at the stats. And we already went through it. There's no reason that Wade Phillips would have got fired. You know the great thing about that, though? Wade Phillips liked that tweet on Twitter. I just love that. I just love the pettiness. They're just like us.
Yeah.
That they're just like us. Wade Phillips is stewing. He loved his job. I'm sure he loved being in Los Angeles, part of a team that was just in the Super Bowl last season. And he gets fired for no reason. And now he's sitting on Twitter stewing, liking tweets, and plotting his return. Poor Wade Phillips. He's really gotten a raw deal throughout his career, I feel like.
Well, I don't really know if he's ever really proven that I think he's a good defensive coordinator.
Yeah, that's what he proved that he could. Did he not prove that he could coach the defense?
Yeah, but I don't feel like he's proven he could be a good head coach.
Well, that's fine. I still feel
But he's a guy who had multiple opportunities to show that he could not coach in the NFL.
It is true. Then he proves that he can coach a defense, and they let him go because someone had to get their heads on the chopping block.
Yeah.
But it wasn't going to be McVay.
Nope. Oh, absolutely. Not going to be Goff.
Nope. Got 130 million, whatever it is, 130 million reasons why that's not going to happen. Sorry, Wade Phillips. Sorry, buddy. You rotund, pink-hued, beautiful gray man, you white boy. I'm actually not going after Wade Phillips. I don't have an issue with Wade Phillips. I have an issue with the numbers. As we went over, speaking of the numbers, Antonio Brown is plus 1,000 to fight this celebrity in a boxing match. We'll tell you who when we come back. You're on the Mac Attack.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell. On 920 The Game.
All All right, Vegas. Join Mickey and his friends at Disney on Ice presents Mickey's Search Party, a brand new adventure filled with world-class skating, high-fly acrobatics, and unexpected stunts. Yeah, that's right. I told you, we were giving back to you, the listeners here on the Mac Attack. We appreciate you guys. Closing in on our first year here on the Mac Attack and kind of realized a few weeks ago, we haven't been doing any giveaways. We haven't been helping you out. So, as I just mentioned, I'm going to give you some tickets to Disney on Ice. What do we got, Magnum? We got two different sets, or was it family four-pack? What's the
deal? Yeah, family four-pack and two sets.
Two sets of four? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Two sets of four. Two sets of four tickets to see Disney on Ice. All right. All right, so there you go. I'm going to give you the chance to win two sets. Well, one set, but we got two sets to give away of a family four-pack to see Disney on Ice. You will be able to use these on January 9th or January 10th, correct, Magnum?
Thursday and Friday.
Thursday and Friday. All right. Now, you got to stick around. Before we head off to break, I'm going to give you a trivia question. And caller six and caller seven. Or actually, no, we can't do that. Because we're going to do a trivia question.
Yeah, first two guys to answer.
First two people.
Or ladies.
Or ladies. If you're out there, hope you are. Couple. Not my mom. Mom, you don't count. You call in, and you're going to answer a trivia question. And, yeah, if you win, you get a four-pack. See Disney on Ice. So there you go. Go say hi to Mickey for us. Let us know how he's doing. All right, Antonio Brown. Guy can't stay out of the news. Whether he's filming music videos or posting cryptic messages on social media.
Zion.
Keep your hands away from Zion. Don't. I do not want to see anything happen to Zion Williamson, who is potentially nearing his return for the New Orleans Pelicans, although it's anyone's guess. We're all anticipating his return, obviously, myself included. You guys have been listening to the show. You know how much I've been waiting for this. I am all aboard the hype train of Zion Williamson. But yeah, AB was hanging with Zion last week, and this week, Antonio Brown, this doesn't surprise me. He's now getting into the celebrity boxing business. Doesn't that seem like it's the natural progression from once fallen stars?
Well, we've seen Tanya Harding.
And it's everyone.
Bagel
Paula
Boss,
Jones. The Bagel Boss guy.
Oh, that guy, yeah. Ugh.
I mean, Danny Bonaducci.
Yeah. The whatever his nickname is. I almost called him something that starts with a D. I know that's not it.
It's just the natural progression. You're a superstar.
Todd Bridges.
You fall on hard times. You do some crazy blank nonsense on social media. Next thing you know, you're on a cheap flyer for celebrity boxing. Now, this isn't just your any celebrity boxing. Antonio Brown says he's down to fight YouTube celebrity Logan Paul, saying, quote, square up. Don't laugh. Don't laugh. Bet Online has set odds. I don't know. Are you surprised by this? Antonio Brown, a +1,000 dog to Logan Paul, who is -2,000. So you bet Antonio Brown. You bet $100, you win 1,000.
I don't know much about this Logan Paul guy, but yeah. I've seen pictures of him. Antonio Brown would kick his ass.
Yeah. See, this is where... Now, Cofield said the same thing. Because we're going to be talking about this on Cofield's show here in a little bit. I should mention, I'm going to be on Cofield and Company. Coming up in about 25 minutes on ESPN Las Vegas. Double duty today, so tune in. Don't let me forget either to do that Disney four-pack on Ice. I feel like that's something I would forget, Magnum.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I'm putting this on you. As I'm sitting here talking about Cofield and Company. Anyway. You think Antonio Brown would whip Logan Paul's ass? The books don't think so. That's why Antonio Brown's +1,000. And you said it, Magnum. You are not familiar with who Logan Paul is. You know what? I'm not really familiar with Logan Paul.
You know how I know who he is? He's the jackass, and I use that because he is.
The Japanese forest.
The guy who found the, was it a girl who hung herself, yeah. And he filmed it in the forest,
yeah.
In Japan?
Yeah. Yep.
And he gained YouTube followers off of that? That's sick.
Yeah.
Sadistic.
He also, He also, I mean, he did apologize for it, and he did get dragged in a very real way.
Deservedly so.
100%. It was a mistake.
And that's someone's kid.
I am not sticking up for Logan Paul. I'm just saying it was a mistake. He acknowledged it was a mistake. But that is one of the things that if you don't know anything about Logan Paul, there is a good chance you heard about that controversy, right?
Yes.
Now, Logan Paul has actually boxed. He boxed another YouTube celebrity named KSI.
KSI.
Okay. They had a huge boxing match about 6 weeks ago, I want to say, at the Staples Center in Los Angeles on DAZN. It was...
Wait, this was on pay-per-view?
This was on pay-per-view. It was on DAZN.
What?
The platform that hosts Canelo Alvarez.
What?
And Bellator and other...
No!
Oh, Anthony Joshua, absolutely.
Come on!
And Magnum? I'm going to be honest, I watched it. And I will say this with zero doubt. I'll put 1,000 on it right now. Logan Paul would absolutely destroy Antonio Brown.
What?
It wouldn't even be a fight.
See, I look at the fact that Antonio Brown doesn't have all his screws tied in tight.
Yeah. All that means is he's going to wing wide punches, he's going to hit on the jaw. Crazy doesn't equate to being a good fighter.
But here's the thing. Antonio Brown is from a very, very, very rough neighborhood.
Yeah, you know what you find out about that situation where a lot of slap boxing. Listen, it's a lot of wide punches. People that you think can fight just because they're athletic or they come from an impoverished background doesn't mean they can fight. Logan Paul, for that fight with KSI, put in real training.
Who the hell is KSI?
He's another YouTube guy.
He's a nobody.
They're both nobodies. To us, yes, they're nobodies.
My kid who watch this stuff?
To your kid, they're everything. That's why they were at the Staples Center, Magnum. That's why it was this massive deal. And it sold.
At KSI. Least on some,
yes.
JJ. Oh, my gosh. I'm not even going to try to say his name. He's a British YouTuber rap personality.
Yes.
He's a member and co-founder of the collective Sideman.
Yeah, why are you going down this rabbit hole? I already told you, he's a YouTuber.
He's a nobody.
Not really. To us, he's a nobody. But again, he's popular. That's why they got the fight, Magnum. And leading up to that fight, both KSI and Logan Paul trained. And I'm telling you this right now. Was it a good fight? Not really. I mean, it was actually moderately entertaining. But in terms of celebrity boxing, it was infinitely leaps and bounds more competent than any other celebrity boxing fight. No, I'm serious.
Tanya Harding was pretty good.
No, I'm telling you.
She beat the snot out of Paula Jones.
I understand. That's because Paula Jones couldn't fight at all. These were two guys that actually took their competition somewhat seriously. They knew they had to train. Their cardio was okay. I mean, they were both winded by the fifth round. Don't get me wrong. I think it only went five rounds. They were both winded, but they were tight. They were accurate. They were good. They were the best celebrity boxers I've ever seen by a country mile. It's not even close. Antonio Brown, unless he's actually spending time on how to throw an effective punch, and yes, he's crazy, and he'd come in there winging and going crazy, but again...
He'd wear himself down.
He would wear himself down. It's not even that. He would leave his chin open. Logan Paul showed in that fight with KSI, he can touch a chin, and he can throw a straight punch. And honest to God, that's all you need to do. That's the first thing you learn in combat. The first thing you learn in boxing, the first thing you learn in mixed martial arts, jiu-jitsu, whatever the case may be. If it's jiu-jitsu, you only need a couple things. You would be shocked at what a very simple eighth grade ankle pick will do to someone in a bar fight. Because they have no comprehension of leverage, of body motion, of anything. They have no training, right? Same thing goes for boxing. You would be shocked what a straight right will do to someone when placed correctly. And Logan Paul understands that. I can almost guarantee you Antonio Brown has no understanding of boxing or how to throw an effective punch, and it would show on that night. He would probably come in with the ego and the assumption that I'm a pro bowler, I'm one of the best wide receivers in the game, I can handle this, no problem. I got this. Well, it's not entirely true. So,
well, the odds makers don't think that Antonio Brown stands much of a chance.
No, but I am really interested in this. I hope this fight happens because...
Well, it'd be kind of funny to see Antonio Brown get knocked on his ass.
Well, I also want to see this line get bet down. Because what are the two... This is great, right? What are the two square opinions?
Well,
you and Cofield, I already know Cofield's, he's going to destroy him. No, he's not. But if enough people actually believe that, that means that line might get bet down to where I get Logan Paul at some Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor numbers. Because that's what this would be. This would be Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor. In terms of a mismatch.
I was on the right side of that one.
Well, everyone was.
Yeah. Well,
I would hope.
You'd hope so,
I would hope so. But that got bet down, I feel like, minus 450,
yeah, it was
minus
ridiculous.
550
I don't,
for Mayweather.
I don't remember what it got, but it was almost like it was too good to pass up.
Oh, 100%. I went on every radio show I did and every spot I did to encourage people to take out a second mortgage, do everything that you possibly can, empty your entire savings, put it all on Mayweather. It was a guaranteed surefire win, and this would be a guaranteed surefire
win. That's hysterical.
For Logan Paul. But you got to wait. You got to get that Logan Paul money down to that Floyd Mayweather money somewhere around. Let's wait till it gets to minus 650. Let the Cofields and Magnums out there bet it down. Speaking of Conor McGregor, we are about, what's day, Tuesday? Yeah. We are about 10 days away from the return of Conor McGregor. Be fighting here. Not this Saturday, but next Saturday at T-Mobile Arena, taking on Donald Cerrone.
10 days from tomorrow.
Yep. And he is here. He is here in Vegas. He is hitting the streets. He's getting his running in. He's being seen. He's posted on social media. So I guess, Vegas, hide your wives, hide your kids.
Hide your old men drinking whiskey at the bar.
Be on the lookout. The Notorious has touched down in Las Vegas. Now, listen, we talked about it. We're going to talk about it more as we get, obviously, closer to the fight. And I talked about it when this fight was announced, and even before it was announced. Conor McGregor has two open sexual assault allegations and cases against him in Ireland right now. Two different ones. Dana White has essentially said that, well, what can we do? He wants to fight. He hasn't been convicted. We're going to let him fight. Well, what was that, Herman, the Yankees pitcher?
Yeah, yeah.
Got suspended 81 games. And I believe that was on an allegation as well. I don't think that has taken the legal course yet. I don't think there was a ruling on that, why he was suspended. My point is other organizations are proactive.
Is this a case of the UFC basically feeling that they're bigger than everyone else?
No question. I think it's just I don't even think it's a case of the UFC thinking that they're bigger than everyone else. I think it's just the UFC understanding that Conor McGregor is the biggest moneymaker they have, and they're willing to roll the dice on if he does eventually get convicted.
I that's kind of how I see it, too. Like, yeah. Hey, you know what? We have an opportunity to exploit this guy.
Yep.
Maybe we have one more big payday in him.
Because if he does get convicted,
his paydays are gone.
Gone. Not even because if he ends up in jail, which, yes, that would hinder his career. But coming back from that.
Yeah. Two.
Right.
Would be very, very difficult.
It would be, and it's not the Mike Tyson situation.
Yeah, because you're going to lose a very big chunk of your audience.
Yeah.
If this happens and you bring him. If it happens and you cut bait, you're like, hey, you know what? We believed what he told us.
Well, I don't think they would have. Oh, you mean if, yes, right. I don't even know if they'd cut bait. I don't know.
You think if he's convicted, they bring him back?
I don't know. I don't know, because you do have Tyson as a precedent.
Yeah, but
he did time for the exact same crime.
But that was 25, 30 years ago.
That is a great point. And it would be interesting.
No social media.
It would be interesting to see how the landscape has shifted.
You know, there were clouds of doubt about Tyson.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the specifics of this, but if he's convicted of beating up a woman or sexual assault,
it was assault.
That's some pretty heavy stuff.
It is. But then you look at Greg Hardy. Greg Hardy was essentially convicted.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And they brought him into the fold.
Oh, there's a precedent right there.
Right, they brought him into the fold saying, hey, he served his time. He's apologetic. It's like, okay, well.
I think the difference here is Greg Hardy was never your biggest star.
Yeah. And he did all of his problems in the NFL, which kicked him out of the league.
Yeah, but he's not your main draw, right? Like if, I don't know, Mayweather seemed to recover, and he went to jail for hitting a woman.
Yeah.
So,
but he had an entire sport in a city and everything else behind him. Now, it could be said that Conor McGregor
has the same thing.
Yeah, I was just saying, it could be said that Conor McGregor has the same sort of sway. I don't really know. I don't know.
I don't know how trials work in Ireland. I would imagine it's pretty similar to here.
Well, it's very secretive. They couldn't even announce McGregor was the one.
You know, as far as like juries and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, all it takes is one person like you had on the OJ trial. Yeah, he's not guilty.
So we will find out. We will find out. And if something does come down with McGregor and they kept him on the roster, knowing what they potentially knew. Just a really bad look. But the point remains, McGregor fights in about 10 days here in Vegas against Donald Cowboy Cerrone, and it is going to be a great fight. It really is. What's our number here, Magnum?
365-9200.
365-9200. All right, it is that time. 365-9200 is the number. You have to call in for your chance to win a Disney on Ice family four-pack. We got two of them, and all you got to do, what was that number again, Magnum?
365-9200.
365-9200. We have been comparing over the last 24 hours Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones to a specific cartoon character. What was that cartoon character? Call in, give us the answer. You're going to Disney on Ice. This is the Mac Attack. We'll be right back.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
You can't touch this.
Well, keep calling, Vegas. Magnum's still on the line with one of our winners, Steve. Hey, Magnum, you got to get Steve off the line. You got to take our next caller to give him the Disney four-pack. All right, so congrats to Steve. He answered the question correctly. I think we got someone else there. All right, call back. We only got one winner because Steve and Magnum spent the entire break on the line. 365-9200, 365-9200. What cartoon character have we been comparing Jerry Jones to over the last 24 hours? 365-9200, you call in, win a family four-pack to Disney on Ice. All right. Then we talk about Conor McGregor. Fights in 10 days. What's coming up tonight? Not 10 days, but in about 4 hours. The vaunted Pittsburgh Penguins, Magnum, coming in here to T-Mobile without Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, kind of disappointing, I think, if you're just a fan of the game. I mean, to not have that guy in there is obviously kind of it's disappointing, I think. It's probably, but, you know, the thing is, it's like you understand that these guys aren't robots. And
right, they need their time.
Yeah, they do. So, yeah. I mean, it is disappointing, but obviously you want to hope Sidney Crosby's at his very best and he's healthy. So
what did you see at Morning Skate?
Well, I could tell you Cody Eakin will be returning.
All right.
So he'll be back on the ice for the Golden Knights tonight. Jonathan Marchessault is a game-time decision.
Okay.
Which we're not sure, but I'm going to answer these other calls.
All right, yeah. Let's get that winner. Let's get that other winner with Steve. All right. So congrats to our winner, Steve, for the Disney on Ice family four-pack. You says they hung up again? Are they hanging up, Magnum, or is this our phone lines?
It could be one or the other.
Okay. 365-9200. What cartoon character have we been comparing Jerry Jones to over the last 24 hours? Well, Magnum said it is a little bit disappointing if you're heading out to the Fortress tonight, hoping to see Sidney Crosby, one of the best of his generation. He's still healing up from an injury, so he will not be in action, but the Vegas Golden Knights will be, and they have been in fuego over the last couple games. Obviously, you guys know out there, first four-game winning streak of the season. And it's not even this, the first four-game winning streak of the season. It's the way they're winning these games. That's what's been so exciting. I mean, you're talking about comebacks. You're talking about for the first time in the history of the Vegas Golden Knights, a couple games ago, they won a game after Marc-Andre Fleury gave up four goals. That had never happened before. So we're seeing somewhat, like, I don't want to be hyperbolic, right? But somewhat historic play from the Vegas Golden Knights. And it couldn't happen at a better time. We're approaching the All-Star break, right, Magnum?
Yeah.
This was a team that started off slowly, sluggishly.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it.
Uncharacteristically.
Well, they started out slow last year, too.
Yeah, but now they're finding their groove as winter comes around. You know what I mean? Yeah. When Christmas comes around, this team really starts to find its groove. And, again, couldn't really ask for better timing. So, I'm going to be interesting to see what happens because you're talking about a playoff team 2 games ago, which I mentioned. Giving up 4 goals for the first time and getting a win for Marc-Andre Fleury. Playoff team against the Philadelphia Flyers. Then yes. You look at the huge win against the St. Louis Blues, which was last game. And it was massive.
Yeah.
Because they fell down early in that game and they came back in a game that I don't think a lot of us had a lot of confidence
no,
in.
I said after the first period, they don't belong on the ice with this team.
I agree. So now I agreed at the time. Clearly they did.
Yes.
Clearly they were wrong.
Me wrong.
Someone ask Gallant what it felt like to beat a good team. And now you're talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight. So if you look at – now, again, I understand the Coyotes are in there. The Ducks are in there. Those are good wins, specific Coyotes win. But if you look at Flyers, Blues, and Penguins, and if you go back-to-back-to-back on them, that is a huge statement to the rest of the league. Obviously, the Pacific Division, Golden Knights sitting at the top, feeling pretty comfortable right now. Tonight could go a long way in continuing those good vibes. So all eyes on the Fortress tonight. Quick note, we will not be on the air tomorrow. No Mac Attack tomorrow. We're going to be preempted by the Lady Rebels, all right? So we'll be back Thursday to chat with you here on the Mac Attack. We'll see you then.